Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for SPIRIT. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents and seniors, everybody who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Since the beginning of the pandemic, SPIRIT continues to be a safe and ideal way for everyone to connect together in a virtual setting. Today's program is Loneliness in the World of Hyperconnectivity, and it will be presented by Tammy Gilden, who is a certified holistic health coach. It is my honor and pleasure to turn the Spirit Forum over to Tammy Gilden. Thank you everyone for joining us.
Hi everyone. Thank you so much. First, I want to thank Rhonda Wunsch for introducing me to Judy. And Judy, thank you and all of the listeners for having me come on today. This morning, I got a really powerful memory. And I think it was my first memory of hearing someone say that they were lonely. And I thought I would share it with you. We were maybe about 30 families that were living in Zichron Yaakov. And we had the privilege in the late 70s and early 80s to have Ruchama Shane come and give us parenting classes. And in one of the parenting classes, she was talking about all the kinds of things that she spoke about. They were very homey and it was really delightful. And she was talking about making food and different recipes and her cute stories, the way she told them. And then somebody in the group said, I feel like a washed out dish rag. And she started to cry. And she said, I'm so lonely. And I was startled. Here we were, a bunch of young mothers. We had little kids, all of us. We were 10 years the same age. And we were too busy to be lonely, so I thought. Except when I thought about this particular woman, she'd come from a big city in the US and we're living now in Zichron Yaakov, Israel, which is very rural. Not quite as rural as Givat Ada was, which is where we lived before, but still in comparison to a big city in the US, it was rural. And what did we do all day? We took care of our children. We waited for our husbands to come home from Kollel. And our lives were so dramatically different. And I understood, I suddenly understood that bit of lonely. Now let's move to COVID. Loneliness really, people view loneliness as something that really only affects people that are either ill or elderly, that they're living alone, or when COVID started, loneliness became sort of a major feature because suddenly everyone was lonely. The one who affected me the most was an extended family member. I'm gonna call her Hannah. Hannah had married a local boy in her town, and she was the go-to person. She was so warm. She was so welcoming. Her home was full of people. She was the head of so many organizations in her city, certainly Bikur Cholim. And she seemed to be a person who could do it all and who had it all and who was just so giving of her time constantly. And she would get together with other people in the community. They would sit down at lunch together and they would discuss different community projects and things and places that needed her help. And she was constantly busy. And then COVID struck and all of a sudden, all of that community disappeared. It was totally attenuated. And she was stuck in her house in quarantine. And because of being stuck in her house in quarantine and being away from what was her usual, she had had anyway some memory issues, but they were minor. And all of a sudden they began to escalate. And unfortunately, she passed away. She went into deep dementia, maybe it was Alzheimer's. And she passed away just a little less than a year ago. And it really struck me then, the damage that loneliness does. And because of my relationship with Hannah, I felt like I had to do something. I couldn't just sit on the sidelines silently. And so I started to do research. And what I found was that the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Medicine says that a third of adults in the United States are lonely. Now, again, some of it comes from what I said. It's a loss of family. They live alone. They might be ill. They also might be caregiving. And as a former caregiver, I was a caregiver for 20 years. Loneliness is a very big factor in caregiving. And I want now to move to, like, I guess, a different way of dealing with being alone. Ahava Aaron Price wrote a really beautiful book. It's called On My Own, But Not Alone. And she talks about the experience of not just widows, but of divorced people, anyone who's alone. And she says that, you know, loneliness, which, you know, again, elicits the feeling of sadness and sorrow and loss, can actually be turned around to solitude. And it takes work. There's no question that it takes us to dig into ourselves, because solitude is a place of learning. Solitude is a place of where we can grow from, whereas loneliness kind of puts us into a very bad place. And when people are suffering loneliness, besides being the fact that they are physically alone, often what happens is that negative thinking comes into play a great deal. And we're going to go to that in a couple of moments. Social isolation, which is what Hannah suffered, again, plays a big factor between loneliness and social isolation, which is loneliness being that even when you're with other people, you still feel that you're alone. And social isolation is not having the contacts socially with whom to converse. So on an emotional level, I know Beaker Holims, pretty much worldwide, are involved with helping seniors. We have programs in Toronto where people used to get together physically, and now, just like over here at OU Spirit, they're doing it virtually. Some of the other things that, when I did my research, I found was very impactful is there are teachers who have had their students write letters to elderly people, and the letters are sent to them. And, you know, an elderly person getting a letter from a child, it's very uplifting for them. There was another program, and I believe that it was, maybe it was in Korea when I was doing the research, that they get people together with facilitators, and the facilitators help these strangers to talk to each other. The surprising factor that I found was who was lonely. And there's a very big component of young men that are lonely. I don't know if that's true for our community, but young men between the ages of 18 to 34 just didn't feel like they had a place. So communally is not really my field, and there are plenty of places that are dealing with that, and of course the safety issues that go with it. My place is more the emotional, personal place, and that we all can reach out. We all know people who are lonely, who are alone, and who need us in some small capacity. In Toronto, we have a kind of like a buddy system where for 5 or 10 minutes, we're calling on a person who's a shut-in, and we pair people up. That was organized by somebody in our community in Toronto. And there's just so many things that we could do, even if we pass somebody in the street and just say hello or smile. it makes a huge difference. The caregiving situation, which I'd like to focus on for a moment, is a unique situation. Oftentimes, pretty much all the time, it strikes people unawares, especially as we age and our spouses become ill. 92% of caregivers are women. And, you know, it's a role that we sort of take naturally. And often we get into a state of despair and loneliness because it creeps up on us so slowly. Like when something happens, we just keep moving and we keep doing. And there's often not time to think about the reaction that we're having because we're so busy taking care of everyone that we love. So caregivers frequently do not reach out for programs that might be available to them and frequently are available in their communities because they're just so tired and exhausted from the constant caregiving with someone who might be ill or have any form of dementia. And so it's really important that as people, that if we know somebody who's in a caregiving situation, often we're afraid. We're afraid to reach out to that person because we just don't know what to say. We feel so bad. We have this great life and they're caregiving. So I want to take away some of the mystique here. Caregivers just want to be spoken to. They don't necessarily want to share, or maybe they need to share. The most important thing, I think, is to tap them into what's going on in normal life outside of their caregiving duties. They really need to hear the normal everyday things. I went to the store, I did this, I saw that, my child did this cute thing. Just the normal everyday things that they miss, like that woman so many years ago who missed her life. We just need to be part and parcel of the life that's going on around us. And caregiving takes us out, and loneliness takes us out of that life. One of the things that's very scary to people is not being part of society. And, you know, if you think of the Metzora, for example, we have Miriam and the whole camp waited for her, but she was outside of the camp waiting to get better. So in the case of the Metzora, he's drawn away from the community, his whole support system and everything. And he or she, it's frightening. It's frightening to be separated. It's frightening to be away from the group. And we all have that basic need to be part of a group of some sort. Even people that are loners, they want the group. They might not want the group in their face, but they want a certain commonality. They want to know that if they ever needed it, it might be there. And I'd like to talk now about two other approaches. So people frequently come to me as a coach and a hypnotist as for someone to help them to just integrate new situations in their life. So I'm going to call her Tali. Tali came to me when she was diagnosed with cancer. And she was afraid, obviously. And she wanted to be able to feel better and be confident in the process that was being recommended to her. So we worked together. One of the things I noticed right away about Tali was how she drew people to herself. She had been divorced very young, and she had moved from one country to another, and she had now come, her third country was Toronto, was Canada. And she had created around her friends, and she had a shul. And as she went through her cancer experience, these things were very primary, but she was somebody who reached out. And it made such a difference. So I worked with her initially, and she joined a program in the hospital called Wellsprings at that time. And she was able to build herself through that program, through the work that we did. And thank God she's now in remission. Another example is Perela. Perela had been living in Israel. She was a very popular teacher, counselor, and she ended up getting Parkinson's disease and moving back to Canada, into Toronto. And again, I saw her. And she was having difficulties with some of the onset conditions of Parkinson's. And Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helped us, and she was able to function better. She too was somebody who called people and she said, you know, hello, and she had little conversations, and then she would say, you know, it would be really great if maybe we could have a game night at my house. And people would come and gather around her, and she's always been somebody who's brought in people to her, and that has helped her to cope with her situation as it is today. And even though she's been back and forth in and out of the hospital with different things, she did get COVID, and she's been able to bounce back. So now I'd like to talk about the fact that oftentimes, what's the underpinning of these bad thoughts that we get when people are lonely? So what I found is that we all have a certain amount of complaints against ourselves. We're usually our worst critic. We pick away and chip away almost no matter who we are. We have things that we wish we would have done differently, mistakes that we've made. We might feel that we're blameworthy. We accuse ourselves. We're angry. We didn't do a good enough job at whatever it is, whether it's raising our children or being a good wife and mother. We might have a job. We feel that we're being criticized, or we are being criticized. And we take all that home and we play it again and again and again. And it undermines us. It makes the loneliness that much worse because we're blaming ourselves. We're saying we don't deserve to be part of a group. We don't deserve to have friends or be friends. Not because we mean to say it, but because we simply do it to ourselves. So one of the things that we need to know, I feel, is how much Hashem loves us. It says, Asher yatzar es ha'adam b'chachma uvaravo. Hashem created us with wisdom. In Ahava Rabba, it says that Hashem has a compassionate love for us. I love you with such a compassionate love, says Hashem. And then again, in Akev, it says, Banim atem l'Hashem Elokeichem, that we are Hashem's children, and he loves us unconditionally. And yes, you know, here we are in Elul now, you know, Ani L'Dodi V'Dodi Li. Who does Hashem say it to except for us, the Yidden? He's talking directly to us. He loves every single one of us. Does it mean that we don't need to change a little bit? Yeah, we need to change. Yes, we've experienced some horrific tragedies in our community this past year. And we need to do some soul searching, but we're still loved unconditionally. We still have that opportunity to make that tweak, to make these changes, to be unafraid to face ourselves in the area where we need change and to make that change. And when we undermine ourselves by constantly accusing, blaming, criticizing, we're doing a major disservice. We're increasing our loneliness. And it, as it says about the Meraglim, it's what the Meraglim thought about themselves that created the Aveira. If they would have thought better of themselves, if they would have thought better, they wouldn't have come to what they did. It's because they thought so little. They thought that they were grasshoppers against these giants, and the giants could just trample them. Tefillah is a powerful connection. As a matter of fact, the word tefillah means bond. And in tefillah, we are putting together two beings into one. We're putting ourselves into Hashem's arms, and we're making this connection with him. Now, there's a story in Hosea. So the story in Hosea could be viewed as allegorical and also could be viewed as actual. So Hashem goes to Hosea and he says, I want you to chastise the people. I want you to rebuke them. And Hosea says, you know, Hashem, this is a free translation. You know, Hashem, these people, you've been doing this for years and they're not getting anywhere. You're not getting any further. So just get yourself another people. And Hashem says, what? What'd you say? Yeah, get another people. People that'll listen to you. Do what you say. So Hashem says, okay, I have an idea for you. You take a wife. So Hosea takes Gomez as a wife. She was a harlot. That was who Hashem appointed for him. He marries her. He has children with her. And Hashem then says, okay, well, now it's time to divorce her. And Hosea says, what? You want me to divorce her? But I married her. I love her. I have children with her. So Hashem says, you have children with her? She's a harlot. She's been going behind your back all this time. And you don't even know if these children are your children. And you're loyal to her? You want to keep her? So Hashem says to him, well, I just want you to know, I took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. I have been keeping them going all these years. And you want me to switch people? I'm not switching people. Just like you're not willing to give up this person who's never been loyal to you. So Hashem really loves us. Hashem is our advocate. Hashem is there for us. And we need to look at ourselves now like he sees us, that we're really good people, that we're really valuable and worthy people, and that we can really make a difference in our lives. That's one of the things that I do in coaching, and that's one of the things that I do in the hypnotic section of the coaching. So I'm going to do a little thought experiment. So I want you to imagine yourself in your kitchen. And you're going to go to your fridge and you're going to take out a fresh lemon. Just take it out and put it in your hand and hold it now just in front of your face. And you can smell that lemon scent. And as you smell that lemon scent, just bring it to your nose and take a good deep whiff. Wow, it smells so lemony. And take another one. Now I want you to bite into it. Just take a big bite and start chewing and chew that lemon and chew that lemon and feel the lemon in your mouth, that tingling, that sort of sour sort of taste, and you can feel the juice squirting in your mouth. All the little sections of the lemon, the peel. Just keep chewing for a few minutes there. And as you're chewing, thinking of that taste, maybe your mouth is puckering. and you're feeling it. And now you can just let it go. How many of you noticed that you started salivating a little bit there? How many of you noticed that your mouth felt a little weird and you had nothing in it? It's because your mind is so powerful. The Nisiv HaShalom says that thoughts are air. And on the one hand, it's definitely true, thoughts are air. But the moment that we put emotion into the thought, the moment that we put a feeling into the thought, as he points out, it becomes something else. So our emotions, our thoughts, elicit feelings. Our feelings elicit emotions. Emotions elicit behavior, and our behavior becomes our actions. So when we're thinking negative thoughts, we're creating negative response in our bodies. And when we're thinking positive thoughts, we're creating positive responses in our bodies. And that's one of the things that I do with transformational coaching and through the hypnosis as well, is whatever it is that we're facing, whether we're facing a surgery, whether we're facing a change that we want to make in our behavior, it's something that when we put a positive emotion around it, when it's something that we can connect to, we can have a positive experience. And oftentimes the thing that bothers people, that really gets them, is something inside of them where they feel unworthy. So where does that come from? You know, we've all lived our lives. We've all had our childhoods. We've had our parents. And every parent comes to child rearing with all the tools that they know how to have. And they really do their best. No parent wakes up in the morning diabolically thinking, how could I torture my child today? Not a healthy, normal parent. So our parents did their best and we were young children. And sometimes we hear things, we heard things, things were said to us, and we took it in, and in our childish way, we had a thought about it, and we carry that thought with us forever without our own knowledge. I'm going to give you an example. So there's a family party, and Tully is playing with toys nearby while everybody's talking and laughing, and somebody calls him into the room, and it's Uncle Shaya. And Uncle Shaya has a red balloon, and he pulls it out of his pocket and he shows it to Tully, and, you know, shows him the balloon, and Tully's so excited. And Uncle Shaya starts blowing up the balloon, and the balloon's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then he ties it off. Okay. And then he starts to hand it to Tully. Somebody else walks by and they hit the balloon, and the balloon flies up in the air, and Tully starts chasing the balloon, and then somebody else bats the balloon another way, and a third person bats it the opposite way, and Tully is running back and forth between all the people who are batting this balloon around. And finally, somebody gives him the balloon, and just as he takes it, the balloon pops with a gigantic pow, and it startles him. But he doesn't cry. He goes back to his toys. And everything goes on. And then he grows up. And years later, he gets this opportunity to take a job somewhere. And he's really excited. He's in a job now. He's getting decent pay. He's really happy. But he's been given an opportunity of a lifetime. So he gets on the plane and he goes to the city and he's got everything ready. And he gets off the plane and out of the airport and he's standing on the sidewalk there, and all of a sudden a car goes by and it, I don't know what you call it, backfires, you know, it goes like a boom sound. And suddenly he's asking himself, wait a minute, what am I doing here? I have a family, I have a good life, I've got a good job, it's paying me the kind of money I want. I mean, yeah, this could be a great opportunity, but do I really need it? Until he turns around and goes home. And he doesn't know that the reason that he did that is because when he was little, this balloon thing happened. It's just a subconscious thing that came up for him that he doesn't relate to anymore. And often, that's what happens to us. We have things that happen to us in our childhood. It's nobody's fault. Nobody tried to do anything to us, but it happened. And sometimes, let's be honest, people are people. Our parents are stressed. They get aggravated, they get angry about something, and we happen to be there. And that's where transformational coaching and hypnosis come in, because we can go back, take a look at that isolated incident. And when you have your adult mind, you can say, oh yeah, that's crazy. Okay, so that was an unfortunate incident, but it doesn't need to define me. I don't need to be that person. I could be the me I want to be. And so the key relationship to combat loneliness is with ourselves. The more that we support ourselves, the more that we stand in our own team, the more that we know about ourselves and appreciate ourselves, the more we can stem and stave off loneliness. Because we can enjoy being with ourselves. After all, Hashem gave us ourselves. We have ourselves from the moment that we were born until the day that we die. We are our longest standing relationship. There's no relationship like the one we have with ourselves. And oftentimes people say, well, it's so selfish to take care of myself, or it's selfish to think of myself. No. Rabbi Akiva says, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. If there's no kamocha, you can't love another person, because you've got to start with you. That relationship is primary to you. And so when we want to do something, we want to be something, we want to be a good mother, we have to love ourselves first. We have to take care of ourselves. I remember a famous story about the kids are all crying, then this mother is sitting and she's eating something. And so for whatever reason, somebody says to her, well, your kids are crying. And she says, yes, I'm making myself a good mother. We have to take care of ourselves. Not exclusively, but certainly we have to be on our list. And we have to think about, especially in a situation of caregiving, especially in a situation of loneliness, when we're on our own, we need to eat properly, sleep properly, give ourselves mental stimulation. And we need to choose to push away negative thinking. Even when it's true, it's usually all true. Yes, we made that mistake. Yes, we didn't do that right. Yes, we could have done better over here. However, here is where we are. And here is what we can do. Birkas Kohanim is framed, you know, So it says, Yivarechacha Hashem v'yishmarecha. Everything is framed in you. it's all about you. Because Hashem loves us and because we are important, we matter, our existence matters. And to you with yourself, your existence needs to matter. And so how do we make ourselves matter to ourselves? So first of all, there are certain things that Hashem created our mind to do. So first of all, our mind likes what's familiar. And it tends to go back to the things that it recognizes. It also is wired to do whatever it will take to keep us alive. That's its primary function, is to keep us alive. It's the most powerful organizer, generator in our whole body. You know, like Manus Friedman says that the neshama is always alive and the body never lived. So the body is kind of like the horse with the rider. So the rider knows where it's going and the body gets dragged along. And what we frequently need to do is, in order to engage our body, we need to acknowledge it a little bit. We need to say to our body, I feel your pain. I feel your resistance. I'm listening to you. I hear you. I see you've got a headache, your stomach's hurting. We need to ask, we need to stop and ask, what's going on in our body? What does our body want to tell us? Because our body doesn't have a clue what's going on, only the mind does. So the mind makes these decisions, says, okay, body, let's go. And the body's afraid, doesn't understand what it's being exposed to. And we might need to stop and allow ourselves to catch up. And the only way that we could do that is by listening in, almost as if you had a forest animal that you wanted to engage. So there's something in your backyard, you want to see what it is. So you want it to come out so you could see it. So you're going to start by just being silent with it. And then maybe you'll move a little closer to it. And after that, maybe you'll put some food out, but you won't go near the food. So that eventually you could see what it is. And we need to behave that way with our body so that we are on the same page, all of us. We're not resistant to whatever it is that we're doing. Now in these next few minutes, I'd like to discuss one other aspect that we started on here. And that's the ability to bounce back. One of the things that Baruch Hashem, if we create within ourselves a healthy relationship with ourselves, we have the ability to bounce back. We have that ability to bounce back because we believe in ourselves. And as a coach, that's one of the things that I point out right from the very beginning. We've all lived our lives up until this point. So what were the strengths? What were the abilities that you brought, that you learned to your life? And if you think about them, you'll have at least three, if not many more. That's where you start from. That's your power. Those are the gifts Hashem gave you, what he taught you through your life, through the challenges of your life. It's also good when we know what we're really good at, when we're able to use the things that we're really good at. And everybody's good at something different. Nobody's good at the same things. But if we know what we're good at, we can use that to build resilience so that when lonely situations happen to us, we can reach beyond them. We can bounce back. We can bring people in somehow, whether it's digitally, whether it's physically, because we all need community. We all need each other. And Klal Yisrael is one. We're one people. If I'm hurting, everybody in Klal Yisrael is hurting too. So I'd like to now do another thought experiment. So I'm going to ask you to close your eyes and just breathe. Our breath is the ultimate spiritual connection. HaKadosh Baruch Hu breathes the breath of life into us. That's why we're here. So just breathe in and breathe out. Breathe in and do that about 5 times. Breathe out. Breathe in and breathe out. And on this 5th breath, as you breathe in, just hold it for a count of 5 at the top. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And let it go. And as you feel the breath leaving and you go back to breathing normally, just allow yourself to glide, slide, enjoy, descend into a safe place, your place. It's your place. You're sitting with yourself. And as you allow yourself to slide into this comfortable place where you know that there's nothing for you to do now, there's nowhere you need to be. And as I said, there's nothing for you to do. It's a safe place, a warm place, or a cool place, depending on what you need. Allow yourself to just see in front of you a path. A path in a woods. It's a safe, easy path. And you're just walking on it, the grass around you, the trees around you, the sun glinting through the tops of the trees as you're walking that path. Everything clearly visible on the path. And as you go down the path and you notice the little forest animals, chipmunks, squirrels, everything just as you expect it to be. Beautiful sky. A warm but not too hot sun. And as you walk that path, you see ahead of you a house, a little cottage. And in front of the cottage, as you get closer and closer, you see that there's a welcome mat, a couple of steps, and you're on the porch. And you're surprised to see that on the door of that little house is your name, because it's your house. and the door's ajar, and you can go in. And you're standing in the house. And it looks whatever way is the most comfortable to you. There's a mantelpiece there, and above the mantelpiece there's a picture, and the picture is of you. Of the you that you liked the best, wearing your favorite clothes, smiling at you, whatever age you were. Just enjoy that picture. That picture of you. That picture of you, who you were, who you are, and who you can be. Take your time and just be together. In the silence of these moments, with that picture of you. And in a moment now, we're going to turn around and leave this cottage behind. You can say au revoir to the picture. You'll be back if you wish. You go out, close the door, go down the steps, start back on the path. And as you're walking back on the path, you're going to notice to the right, there's a very smooth, large rock. And as you get closer to the rock, you're going to see that there's something sticking out underneath. Go over to that rock and pick it up. Now, I don't know what's written on that message. But whatever is written on that message is a message that you need to hear. A positive, healthy message that you need to take with you and that you'll remember. Put the message in your pocket and keep coming back. And as I count from 1 to 5, we're going to come back into the room. 1, just noticing your space and the air in that space. 2, the chair that you're sitting on. 3, everyone else around you. 4, just stretch a little if you need to. And 5, open your eyes. And we're here. And if you have any questions, I'm here. You can reach me through my website.
Thank you so much, Tammy. I don't see any questions coming through me. Do you have any that maybe came to you directly? We thank you so much. No, okay, nothing came to the Orthodox Union directly. Okay, I guess everybody's just thinking about all that you said, you know, getting inspiration, and perhaps people will reach out. We will include Tammy's email and her website on the information that we'll be sending out, so you can reach her directly. That works, Tammy, right? Wonderful.
Thank you again so much for having me.
Our pleasure, absolutely our pleasure. Thank you so much for being here and for giving us so much inspiration. Okay, I wanna thank everybody for joining us this morning. As you all remember, Spirit is now once a week. Next week, we will be hearing from our leaders from the Shalom Task Force, an organization that I do a tremendous amount of work with. We love working with them and all of the help that they do. And actually, they're going to be speaking about those who are actually in the dating process, giving suggestions and thoughts, things to think about. And also, this is not just meant, by the way, for those who might be starting over, for those who haven't, who've been in process, but it's for those who are friends and relatives to help, for to be a mentor and guidance. You know, you want to make sure that if you have a friend or a relative that's in the dating process, that you don't give them the wrong ideas, that you don't give a suggestion that might not be appropriate, that if somebody wants to talk to you, you want to make sure that you're listening properly. So this program is for everyone. It'll be next Tuesday, and of course, you'll be getting information about it later. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Thank you, Tammy, for being with us today. And everybody, have a great day. Have a great week. Be safe and be healthy.
Thank you so much again for the privilege of being here.